Hare Krishna. Here we are again in Vrindavan. We were in the Goshala and we spoke about chapter 13. Yes? So, this time we'll be discussing chapters 14 and 15. We'll see how far we get in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Has anybody read in advance the chapter 14, chapter 15, first canto? To appreciate a topic, it's nice to appreciate its the context and the flow of the presentation of the subject. So we'll just briefly discuss the topics of chapter 13. One of the very nice things about chapter 13 is that the sections of chapter 13 cover the essential topics of the first canto, which cover the essential topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's a very nice chapter. But a lot of understanding is in chapter 13 about the importance of a sadhu, how to receive a sadhu, the message of a sadhu. In this case, in chapter 13, Vidura is the principal person who's sadhu-like because he's achieved spiritual perfection even before he left the royal palace. Vidura was considered by everybody to be wise Vidura. But when he left and went on pilgrimage and spent 34 years on pilgrimage, wasn't just a 3-day pilgrimage to Vrindavan or a 9-day pilgrimage to Vrindavan. It was a 34-year pilgrimage culminating in his hearing from Maitreya. More than a third of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the topics of Maitreya hearing. Excuse me, Vidura hearing from Maitreya. So, to the point where he became a perfectly realized soul, Maha Bhagavata Vaishnav, and Vidura returns to the royal palace. For one purpose, to deliver his elder brother. So, after he delivers his message, he's received, there's exchange with the royal family in a private place, he gets Dhritarashtra and lets him have it. Transcendental knowledge, detachment, become attached to the higher purpose of life. And Dhritarashtra accepts the message of Vidura, which he's heard before, but not like he heard this time. So he leaves the palace. Gandhari goes with her husband. Vidura accompanies them both. They go into the forest and in a fixed trance of meditation, Dhritarashtra's body ignites in fire, bursts into flame, and he leaves his body ascending to a higher realm, even after so many sinful activities, were his responsibility. But by transcendental knowledge and by the means of fixing consciousness upon the Supreme, he was released from those reactions. And then we find the sequel. Maharaj Yudhisthira, the next morning, after his morning duties, goes to greet his uncle, Dhritarashtra, only to find that Dhritarashtra isn't there and Gandhari isn't there. So he goes to Sanjaya, the secretary of Dhritarashtra, and asks Sanjaya, where has Dhritarashtra gone? And Sanjaya doesn't know. Sanjaya is feeling betrayed. How can my master, who I have served so faithfully, who never did anything without consulting me, has just gone? So, being Maharaj Yudhisthira, he starts to blame himself. I must have offended my uncle in some way. Otherwise, why would he have gone? So to relieve Yudhisthira of unnecessary grief, another sadhu arrives. Narada Muni. And another instruction on how to receive a sadhu, the importance of a sadhu, and then the message of the sadhu. And Narada's message is very simple. He said, don't worry about your uncle. Right now, he's about to leave his body and achieve spiritual perfection. So you should be very happy for him. And don't try to go find him, because practically speaking, at this moment, he's leaving his body. So rest assured, he's in good hands. He's then he also gives some indication which is important for this chapter, chapter 14. He says, that very soon, Krishna is also going to leave. I'll read text 49 and text 50 of chapter 13. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, in the guise of all-devouring time, Kalarupa, has now descended on earth to eliminate the envious from the world. The Lord has already performed his duties to help the demigods, and he is awaiting the rest. He doesn't say what that is, the rest. The rest is he's going to withdraw the Yadu dynasty. And then he's going to go. That's the rest. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth. Very, it's like a code. But Yudhisthira gets it. Yudhisthira is very smart. When Vidura spoke in a riddle upon leaving Hastinapur and going to the house of lack, Vidura spoke in some enigmatic way, some puzzling way, like a riddle. And Kunti later said to Yudhisthira, what did he say? He said, there's going to be an attempt to kill us, and we should beware, because it will be by fire. The attempted murder will be to burn us to death. Vidura was giving us this warning. We should be very careful. But Yudhisthira he understood Narada's indication. Narada pacified Yudhisthira, explaining, this is the Lord's plan, and the Lord has further plans, and you're part of those plans, so be patient. And with that, Narada left. I mean, literally, he just played upon his veena and zoom, 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 off he went. Narada Muni Bhajai Veena. And went to the next service that he has for Krishna. That ends chapter 13. So, chapter 14 opens. I'll describe the scene. It's Mara's Yudhisthira once again, waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for news of Krishna, because Mara's Yudhisthira sent his very expert, capable, powerful brother Arjuna to go to Dwarka and get news of Krishna. What is his plan? Later on, the indication is given. Actually, everybody knew. The indication of Narada was a hint, but in their heart, they knew. The purpose of Krishna's appearance has been fulfilled. And what's left? Krishna is going to leave. No one wanted to say it, but everybody knew it. And so Arjuna was sent to find out what is the plan of Krishna. And he didn't return. 7 months passed and he didn't return. And Yudhisthira is seeing bad omens. The description is that not only the bad omens were portending, they were giving message of something bad that was going to happen, but the omens themselves were bad, very fearful. And the section that we're going to read concludes, Yudhisthira, being very wise, could understand there's only one message from these. Because when Krishna was on the planet, nothing like this could happen. That this is happening tells me that Krishna has left the planet, even before Arjuna comes back. But he didn't want to say it. Didn't really want to even think the thought. But he knew. The topic of Krishna's departure from this world is not a pleasant topic. In one sense, the topic of Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Narada Muni starts to speak about it, he hesitates to speak about it. He says that it brings so much pain to the Vaishnavas. It's one of the most painful things to speak about. So nobody likes to speak about it. Because the pain of the separation of the dearmost devotees of Krishna, feeling separation from Krishna, the anguish, the torment, the terrible anguish and hurt that they felt. It's too much. But then he goes on speaking about it and speaking about it and speaking about it and speaking about it. When speaking about it, it's hard to stop speaking about it. Because that mood of separation increases in the intensity of love. So he speaks some very amazing things about Krishna's departure from Vrindavan. So also Krishna's departure from this world. And embedded within the Leela of Krishna's departure is something that further makes it hard. And that is to understand how the Lord can apparently die. Can you give somebody, give Zubin the key? I want to have him bring the laptop. And could you, there's a little chapstick. And then the shoulder bag. Those three things. So I'm going to speak a little bit about the pastime of the Lord's disappearance. Just how to understand the Lord's disappearance. Krishna says, if one can understand his appearance, his janma, and his activities, janma karma cha me divyam evam yoviti tatvataha chaptva deham punar janma naiti mami disur. Because the pastimes of Krishna are fully transcendental. If one can understand them, then your consciousness, it means your consciousness is transcendental. But how transcendental is our consciousness? And how much can we understand? Because one of the charming features of Krishna's Leela, as well as Ramachandra's Leela, is the apparent human-like nature of them. Krishna appears as a cowherd boy. In all other Leelas of the Lord, he appears as a Brahmana or a Kshatriya. This is unique. He's not a Brahmana or a Kshatriya. He's a cowherd boy. Simple cowherd. So, apparently, very worldly. With the calves and with the cows, with his cowherd boyfriends, off into the forest and all day long playing. But the transcendental nature is every day, without exception every day, he would kill big, terrible demons and he lifted the hill of Govardhan, just 7 years old. It takes us 6 hours to walk around Govardhan. And Krishna just lifted that Govardhan hill with his left hand, not even his right hand. And the little finger of his left hand, he held it up. Think about it, how big is Govardhan? For 7 days and seven nights. And then placed it back down exactly in the position where it was before. He showed his transcendental nature even when he was performing childhood pastimes. Krishna married. So people of this world, they also become married. But when Krishna married, 16,108 wives and a palace, not just a house, palace for each one of those wives. And he manifested himself as 16,108 Krishnas with each of the wives. Who can do that? Divyam, his pastimes are transcendental. Krishna danced with young girls. Everybody knows about Krishna's dancing in Rasa dance. They may not know so many things about Krishna, but they know Rasa dance. But they may not know that when Krishna performed Rasa dance, that he manifested multiple forms of Krishna in between each of two gopis. Krishna was dancing simultaneously throughout the whole of the Rasa dance in multiple Krishna forms. Who can do that? His pastimes are transcendental. And on and on one can go and consider the pastimes of Krishna and how they're transcendental. Now what about this disappearance pastime? Krishna apparently died and left behind his body. But this body that he left behind was the Virat Rup, according to the description that's found in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the final canto. There's a whole leela describing it. That same Virat Rup that he showed to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. There's a description of this pastime of Krishna's departure found in the 11th canto in chapter 6 of the 11th canto. There's a narration of Lord Brahma and the demigods visiting Krishna in Dwaraka after the Kurukshetra battle takes place and before the disappearance pastime of Krishna. And Brahma describes that he understands Krishna is going to leave. I'd just like to read in a summary some of the very nice things that Lord Brahma says. With many demigods he went to Dwaraka, and as soon as they came before Krishna, Lord Brahma offered beautiful prayers. Here's some of those beautiful prayers. My dear Lord, previously we requested you to descend, to remove the burden of the earth. O unlimited personality of Godhead, that request certainly has been fulfilled. You have reestablished the principles of religion among pious men. You have also distributed your glories all over the world, and thus the whole world can be purified by hearing about you. His pastimes provided subject matter for persons to discuss so they could become purified by those very subject matters. Descending into the dynasty of King Yadu, you have manifested your unique transcendental form. And for the benefit of the entire universe, you have executed magnanimous transcendental activities, my dear Lord. Those pious and saintly persons who, in the age of Kali, hear about your transcendental activities and also glorify them, will easily cross over the darkness of the age. Because technically, according to our acharyas, Kali Yuga began just after the Battle of Kurukshetra, but Krishna was still on the chronological or the astrological calculation was Krishna was still on the planet, and so Kali couldn't manifest its symptoms. But when Krishna left, a rush of the symptoms of the age of Kali came. That's what Maharaj Yudhisthira was detecting. O my Lord, you have descended into the Yadu dynasty, and thus you have spent 125 autumns with your devotees. Interesting way of saying. You stayed for 125 autumns with your devotees. My dear Lord, there is nothing remaining at this time for your lordship to do on behalf of the demigods. You have already withdrawn your dynasty by the curse of the brahmanas. So this, the curse of the brahmanas, this has already happened. That incident where Samba, along with some of his other friends, came before some brahmanas with a Samba dressed like a pregnant woman, sari over his head, and a lump of iron in his abdomen, asking the sages, can you tell us about the child that will be born? They were joking, making fun of the brahmanas who could tell the future. So the brahmanas made the curse. Yes, that woman over there will give birth to that which will bring the destruction of your dynasty. That lump of iron will bring the destruction of your dynasty for your offense to the brahmanas. So the brahmanas' curse has happened. What Brahma is saying is the curse has brought about the destruction, as if it's already happened. Only they just said it, but the event hasn't happened yet. O Lord, you are the basis of everything, and if you so desire, kindly return now to your abode in the spiritual world. At the same time, we humbly beg that you always protect us. We are your humble servants, and on your behalf, we are managing the universal situation. We, along with our planets and followers, require your constant protection. The jiva, the surrendered soul, is always feeling themselves to be dependent for the protection of the Lord. This is a theme that is going to be repeated and repeated. The liberated souls are on a platform with the Supreme Lord, but they're not thinking, oh, I'm on the platform with the Supreme Lord. I'm safe. I can be cavalier. I can do as I like. But they're feeling differently. They're feeling very dependent upon the Lord's protection. That's their perfection. Then the Lord speaks in response. And he confirms, yes, you called me. And therefore I reciprocated with your request. I came, I descended, and I performed that which you requested of me. Having removed the burden of the earth, I have executed everything required on your behalf. That very Yadava dynasty in which I appeared became greatly magnified in opulence, especially in their physical strength and courage, to the extent that they threatened to devour the whole world. And the purports, the explanation is given. When Prabhupada speaks of this in Krishna book, Krishna was thinking, this Yadu dynasty, it's invincible. And when I leave, Kali Yuga will begin. And invisible persons in the age of Kali is going to be a big problem. So I should take them from this earth. I have to make a plan. So he's disclosing it's Krishna's plan. Therefore, I have stopped them. Just as the shore holds back the great ocean, if I were to leave this world without withdrawing the overly proud members of the Yadu dynasty, the whole world would be destroyed by the deluge of their unlimited expansion. Now, due to the Brahmana's curse, the annihilation of my family has already begun. O sinless Brahma, when this annihilation is finished, the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, that one, and I am en route to Vaikuntha, I will pay a small visit to your abode. Not just wave as I go by, but I'll come and visit in Satyaloka. So this is all part of the Lord's plan. His coming and his activities while here, all transcendental activities, and then his return. In the final chapter of the 12th canto, there is the departure of Lord Krishna from this world. It does not describe what it does in Mahabharata, the arrow and the hunter and the heel of Krishna. It doesn't give the detail of the Leela, but it describes the Leela. Just wanted to read a little bit from the Srimad Bhagavatam where that Leela is described. Excuse me, this isn't the last verse of the 12th canto, it's the last verse of the 11th canto, last chapter, chapter 31, where mention is made that this is Shukadev speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, where he says that when Krishna left, he didn't leave the same way Dhritarashtra left, or other yogis may leave, where by trance of meditation, the intensity of their meditation is so strong, they invoke fire, Agnayi meditation. Agnayi is a particular type of meditation that invokes fire. And as did Sati, she did the same thing. She burnt her body with the fire of meditation. But specifically, Shukadeva Goswami says, Krishna didn't have to do that because he has no material body to be burned. He just left in his spiritual body. Because he is the object of his own meditation. Dhritarashtra had to meditate upon the Supreme. Krishna is the Supreme. Dhritarashtra had a material body. Krishna has no material body. In the commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks of a statement made earlier in the 11th canto, the same canto, where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, and Krishna says, within the fire, one should meditate upon my form, which is the auspicious object of all meditation. His indication is, since Krishna's form is within fire, how is it that fire could destroy Krishna's form? Therefore, Krishna's form is spiritual. and there's no destruction of Krishna's form. Rather, there's no, so his disappearance lila is perhaps the most difficult of all of his lilas to understand. Now we're getting entrance into that mystery by our acharyas and Sukadev Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He didn't disappear. He didn't die and leave a body, but he exhibited a lila. The very next verse is, as soon as Krishna left the earth, truth with a capital T, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty immediately followed him. And that's also mentioned in the earlier in the first canto when Krishna departed. There all these virtuous things left with him. So now where is virtue to be held? Where is the embodiment of religion? Where's the protection of religion? Now that Krishna has left, and the answer is Srimad Bhagavatam is that. The literary form of Krishna has appeared. Sukadeva Goswami says it's like lightning appearing from a cloudless sky. No one can understand from whence it appears and what its movements are. Because even, you know, in high school science, we learned that lightning comes from clouds, and we can see there's a cloud, there's clouds in the sky, and it's the, you know, the clash of warm and cold air. That's what science says. And where does that manifest from the cloud? But where is there lightning in a cloudless sky? Similarly, Sukadeva Goswami says Krishna appeared like that. He just appeared. There was no material cause for his appearance. And he just disappeared. No material cause. Everyone was astonished, both at his appearance and his disappearance. My dear King, you should understand that the Supreme Lord's appearance and disappearance, which resemble those of embodied conditioned souls, are actually a show enacted by his illusory energy. It's an action of his internal potency that looks like the action of the external potency. He creates the universe. He enters into the universe. He plays with it within it for some time. And at last, he withdraws it within himself. Most amazing. Then the Lord remains situated in his own transcendental glory, having ceased from the functions of cosmic manifestation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a little story to understand the Lord's pastime of disappearance. He gives the story of one magician. One time, it's apparently a true story, one time a magician who was very expert was invited by the king to show some magic. So the magician said, very well, you bring some part of your royal treasury. So he brought jewels and pearl necklaces and gold coins and all kinds of valuables. And the magician went over to the treasury pile and said, see this beautiful necklace? And he motioned his hand and it's gone and you'll not get it back. He went and picked up some coin. This is right in the Bhagavatam. Picked up a gold, a a handful of golden coins and said, "My dear king, this is going to disappear and you'll not get it back." And it was gone. And then he said, "And I will show you even better. Your royal paraphernalia has 7,000 horses. And just like that, those horses will be gone and you'll not see them again." And they disappeared. And then he said, "Your children, your royal family, and your queens, they are also gone. My dear king, one more thing. I myself have learned all this from my teacher. He also taught me mystic yoga. And I've decided to give up my body in a sacred place. And because you're the embodiment of so many pious activities, I will now give up my body right before you." And he sat down in mystic posture and dhyan, dharana, and samadhi, and his body burst into flames and he left his body. And his wives, magicians' wives, lamenting the loss of their husband, entered into the fire, right into in the presence of the royal assembly. And the king, sitting on his throne, watching all this happening in his royal assembly. "I don't know if I should have invited this magician to come to my palace." Several days later, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur is narrating, the magician, back in his local residence, sends one of the daughters, his daughters, before the king and says, "My dear king, I have brought with me in an invisible form all of your royal family and all of the paraphernalia that my father made disappear. So if you feel that this is a very nice magic trick, you can give reward to my father as you feel is appropriate." So Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's comment is, what to speak of a worldly magician. The personality of Godhead performed his appearance, manifesting his associates with whom he performed his pastimes. He withdrew them and he withdrew himself all by his own internal potency. If one, in this way, the disappearance pastime of the Lord is to be understood. So since chapter 14 and chapter 15 are on the topic of the Lord's disappearance, I thought it'd be nice to frame the whole discussion so that we don't become confused and thinking in some mundane way about these sequence of events. It's the Leela of the Lord being observed by his unalloyed devotees. We're going to hear the mention of the names of Yudhisthira, then Bhima and Arjuna as they're contemplating this disappearance of the Supreme Lord, how they're processing that disappearance pastime. So the chapter begins, chapter 14 begins with Yudhisthira, as I mentioned, waiting and waiting and waiting for Krishna to return, or for Arjuna to return with news of Krishna. And he doesn't return. After a few months had passed, he began to observe some inauspicious omens, which were there in themselves fearful. In the purport, Prabhupada discusses that Krishna is like the sun. But how can you compare Krishna to being like the sun? Well, because Krishna gives life to everything within this universe. Because of the presence of the sun, things grow, things are sustained, things are maintained. But what is one sun, Krishna, with one exhalation of a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna? Millions and billions of suns are generated just with one breath. So, as with the light of the sun, what darkness can stand? So similarly, with the presence of Krishna, what inauspiciousness can there be? There can be none. And therefore, when there's symptoms of inauspiciousness, the pure devotee, Maharaj Yudhisthira, is deducing Krishna must not be on the planet anymore. What were some of those symptoms? He saw that the direction of eternal time had reversed. And this was very fearful. There were disruptions in the seasonal regularities. People in general had become very greedy, angry, and deceitful. And he saw that they were adopting foul means of livelihood. And of course, we're used to it, all these things. But at the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira, it was not known. The foul means of livelihood or improper execution of occupational duty is not recognizing what our duties are and neglecting them, either deliberately or unknowingly. Everyone has their swadharma, their duty. But right from starters, most people don't have a clue what is their swadharma because they don't have someone to receive their duty from. Duties are assigned. Duty means unto someone. Just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we were discussing this morning. That nice passage where the residents of Shikanda were returning back to their place, their residence. Mahaprabhu was receiving everybody and dispatching them. So he gave to three family members three different services. And that was their duty. Raghunandan, you do deity worship. Mukunda, you earn spiritual and material wealth. Narahari, you stay here. You study with Gadadhar Pandit, Srimad Bhagavatam, and you become qualified as a preacher. So because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assigned those duties to them, that's their duty. Duty follows or corresponds with one's nature, but supposing, as Srila Prabhupada gave his disciples things to do that we may have thought, it's against my nature. But it's our duty, and so it becomes our duty, whether it's our nature or not our nature. So many persons were simply engaged in going out in congregational chanting, and who could say, oh, that's my nature. I just like going out singing and dancing all day long, 12 hours a day. It just suits my nature very well. And going up to people I never saw before, when they left their home, it's not what was in their mind to go find a Hare Krishna person in the street and say, I'd like to go buy some literature from them. We go confront those people and say, here, take some literature, please. That's my nature. That's not, but it's a duty, and the duty becomes a means of elevation, purification, satisfying the Supreme Lord. So when people don't follow their duty, this is maintaining oneself by foul means. That's how Prabhupada explains it in the purport. Some other discrepancies. All ordinary transactions and dealings became polluted with cheating, even between friends. And in familial affairs, there was always misunderstanding between fathers, mothers, and sons, between well-wishers, and between brothers, even between husband and wife. Of course, that doesn't happen in Krishna consciousness, but between husband and wife, there was always strain and quarrel. In the purport, Prabhupada speaks of the defects of the conditioned soul. And there's four in number. And he says of the four, one is most prominent. The most prominent one is cheating. But Prabhupada writes, make mistakes, subject to illusion, cheating propensity, imperfect senses. Certainly imperfect senses is very strong, but you know, in acting or social interaction, cheating propensity becomes very prominent in the absence of Krishna consciousness, the absence of the presence of Krishna in one's thought and life. In course of time, it came to pass that people in general became accustomed to greed, anger, pride, etc. Maharaj Yudhisthira, observing all these omens, spoke to his younger brother. In this case, they're all his younger brothers, but his younger brother, Bhima. I sent Arjuna to Dwarka to meet his friends and to learn from the personality of Godhead Krishna of his program of work. Since he departed, 7 months have passed, yet he has not returned. I do not know factually how things are going there. Is he going to quit his earthly pastimes, as Devarshi Narada indicated in chapter 13? Has that time already arrived? In the purport, Prabhupada speaks of some of the prominent verses of Bhagavad Gita where the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities is discussed. 4, 7, and 8 Bhagavad Gita. Pritranaya sadhunam vinashaya shudhuskritam. He also speaks of, from chapter 3, if I cease to work, then all humanity will be misdirected. I'll be cause of creating unwanted population, and it would therefore destroy the peace of all beings. Therefore, I'm performing activities, although there's nothing for me to do. There's no duty for me. So, Krishna's transcendental is the message. And his appearance is transcendental, his activities are transcendental, his disappearance is also transcendental. Here Prabhupada expresses several times that his leaving this world and leaving behind a body, although he has no material body, this is his Virat Roop. The Virat Roop exhibited on the battle for field of Kurukshetra is the material conception of his form. That's an interesting statement. The Virat Rup is the material conception of his form. When his form is transcendental, so how can you have a material conception? It's a mistaken conception. It's an illusory conception. And this Virat Rupa is that material conception of his form. Conceiving of his form in the wrong way. And it's manifest as Virat Rupa. Therefore, it should be understood that when Lord Krishna was apparently killed by the bow and arrow of the hunter, the Lord left his so-called material body in the material world. The Lord is Kaivalya, absolute oneness. And for him, therefore, there is no difference between matter and spirit, because everything is created by him. Therefore, his quitting one sort of body and accepting another body does not mean that he is like the ordinary living being. So what body did he quit? He doesn't have a body to quit. There's no inside and outside for Krishna. There is for us. There's the soul inside and the body is outside, and the soul quits the body, it leaves the body. What body did Krishna have to leave? He is his body. So his leaving behind a body is a pastime for bewildering the minds of the conditioned souls. That's all. And for him, that's not a problem, because for him, matter and spirit, everything is coming from him. Very difficult pastime without spiritual guidance to understand. Prabhupada writes, I'm going to read about four sentences. When Maharaj Yudhisthira was lamenting the possibility of Krishna's disappearance, it was just in pursuance of a custom of lamenting the disappearance of a great friend. But factually, the Lord never quits his transcendental body, as is misconceived by less intelligent persons. Such less intelligent persons have been condemned by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita. And they are known as mudhas. That the Lord left his body means that he left again his plenary portions in the respective dhams as he left his Virat Rup in the material world. So he's when Krishna appeared, all because he's the form, all the forms of the Lord assembled together in one form and appeared. And they left their abodes in the spiritual world to come here. But they didn't leave their... He expanded. He doesn't like leave a vacancy. You go knock on Krishna's door and there's nobody home. And similarly, when Krishna left, behind, he entered the material world, he left a material form. By expanding. But because this place is material, then it appears as a material form. Going back to the magician, taking the gold coins, they disappear. Taking the necklace, it disappears. 7,000 horses disappear. The whole family of the king and his children and his queens disappear. And he disappears, but none of them have disappeared. He's off in his village, sending his daughter to the king, saying, I've brought everything back invisibly. Now, if you'd like, you can give some bakshish, some remuneration for this nice... It's the display of Krishna's potencies, is the message. Yudhisthira goes on. From him only, from Krishna only, all our kingly opulence, good wives, lives, progeny, control over our subjects, victory over our enemies, our future accommodations in higher planets have become possible. All this is due to his causeless mercy upon us. He's considering, how is this possible? Krishna created all of this. And then he entered within that which he has created. If he goes, does that mean everything here also goes? Our progeny, our wealth, our kingdom, our prowess, our... But he's the source of that. So he's bewildered. Apparently. Just see, Bhima, O man with a tiger's strength, how many miseries due to celestial influences, earthly reactions, and bodily pains, all very dangerous in themselves, are foreboding danger in the near future by deluding our intelligence. Well, just the rest of the verses just describe these horrible symptoms. Just see, Bhima, how the she-jackal cries at the rising sun and vomits fire. And how the dogs bark at me fearlessly. Oh, Bhimasen, tiger among men. Now, useful animals like cows are passing me on my left side, and lower animals like asses are circumambulating me. My horses appear to weep when seeing me. Just see this pigeon as like a messenger of death. The shrieks of the owls and their rival crows make my heart tremble. It appears that they want to make a void of the whole universe. Just see how the smoke encircles the sky. It appears that the earth and mountains are throbbing. Just hear the cloudless thunder and see the bolts from the blue. Cloudless thunder. But there's no clouds in the sky. Bolts of lightning coming from a blue sky. The wind blows violently, blasting dust everywhere and creating darkness. Clouds are raining everywhere with bloody disasters. Blood is coming from the clouds. The rays of the sun are declining, and the stars appear to be fighting amongst themselves. Confused living entities appear to be ablaze and weeping. Rivers, tributaries, ponds, reservoirs, and the mind are all perturbed. Butter no longer ignites fire. What is this extraordinary time? What is going to happen? And so on. The deities seem to be crying in the temple, lamenting and perspiring. They seem about to leave. All the cities, villages, towns, gardens, mines, and hermitages are now devoid of beauty and bereft of all happiness. Now he concludes, I think that all these earthly disturbances indicate some greater loss to the good fortune of the world. The world was fortunate to have been marked with the footprints of the lotus feet of the Lord. These signs indicate that this will no longer be. Krishna has left. So the conclusion, symptoms, like, you know, we see things that happen that are disturbing. And we think those things that happen, they're disturbing. But they're the symptoms of something that's the root that's even more disturbing. The loss of Krishna consciousness. The real suffering is to forget Krishna. And when we forget Krishna, in that dark condition, so many fearful things start to happen. Those fearful things is not the greatest suffering. It's the forgetting Krishna is the greatest suffering. Because when one is remembering Krishna, the energies of the Lord act differently. The auspiciousness, just by Krishna's placing his lotus feet on the earth, everything was bountiful. Queen Kunti describes this in her prayers. In the coming chapters, Mother Earth is also describing the same thing to Dharma. Religion personified in the form of a bull. When Krishna was walking on the surface of my form, Mother Earth, I was in ecstasy. And in my ecstasy, bountifully everything was supplied. Minerals and jewels and production of grains and everything in abundance. But now Krishna's gone. So that supply is being restricted. So tomorrow morning we'll hear Arjun returns. After a long, long wait, and there's a dialogue between Yudhisthira and Arjuna.
Can I speak in Hindi, Maharaj? महाराज जो आपने कहा था कि जब कुछ सिम्टम्स बुरे हमारी लाइफ में मिलते हैं हमें तो ये दिखते हैं तो हमें ये समझना चाहिए कि कृष्ण कॉन्शियसनेस के एब्सेंट की वजह से हैं और एक चीज हम ये सुनते हैं कि जो भगवान का प्रोटेक्शन और लव जो है वो अनकंडीशनल है तो ये अनकंडीशनल नेचर भगवान का कि अगर हम कृष्ण कॉन्शियसनेस नहीं भी है या भगवान की तरफ मतलब हम नहीं सरेंडर है या फुल नहीं है तो भी भगवान का लव और प्रोटेक्शन और एवरीथिंग मतलब वो देते हैं हमें और यहाँ पर ये है कि सिम्टम्स गलत मिल रहे हैं तो ये समझना तो दोनों को अंडरस्टैंड करने में डिफिकल्टी
महाराज आस्किंग दैट in this discussion, it was described that the root cause of all the difficulties and all the inauspicious omens that we see is because of a lack of Krishna consciousness. But on the other hand, it is said that Lord's love for us is unconditional. And whether we remember or not, whether Krishna consciousness is good or not, He gives His protection and He loves us unconditionally. So I am unable to understand why these kinds of bad omens and other things are manifested. Why these kinds of inauspicious things manifest when we don't remember?
Well, Krishna gives his protection. Like the state gives protection to all citizens. But some citizens, the protection is they put them in prison for their protection. The protection primarily goes to the law-abiding citizens. And the law-breaking citizens, they're punished. But that's also protection. So it's not a discrepancy. What's consistent, you're using the word Krishna gives his protection to all. More specifically, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, more accurately, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is, yayatamam prapadyante tangs tadaiva vajamiham, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So the surrender unto Krishna may be negative. Their approach to Krishna may be inimical or, hostile. And so Krishna regards that bad attitude as, okay, if you want me to be your enemy, I can be your enemy. You want me to be your friend, I can be your friend. So Krishna is neutral, and Krishna reciprocates with all. So the protection, Pritranaya Sadhanam, is especially extended to those who are saintly. And Vinashaya Duskritam, Krishna is neutral towards those who are Duskriti, but he behaves or reciprocates towards them as they regard him. So I think the premise of your question is mistaken. That Krishna, it's not that he extends his protection equally, he extends his reciprocation equally as they regard him.
Maharaj, while reading, like Brahma spoke how to cross over this age of Kali, and we hear so many different places in Bhagavatam wherein, like, how to deliver yourself from the age of Kali, get perfection in the age of Kali. So, my question is, the more focus is, it's mentioned about the people in the age of Kali.
Say it slower.
Yes, Maharaj.
Your question is?
My question is, there is so much description found in the scripture about how one can deliver one who's in the Kali Yuga as compared to Satyug, Treta or Dwapar Yuga. So, my question is, why is it so? Most of the description is about the living entities who are in Kali Yuga.
Okay. Let me make sure I got your question right. Let me ask you the question back and see if I've got it right. Scriptures say that there are four yugas and there are methods for achieving perfection in each of the four yugas. It seems that the Bhagavatam speaks very much about what to do about this age of Kali. Why so much emphasis on the age of Kali instead of the other three yugas also equally? Why not? Are they not equally represented? The compilation of Srimad Bhagavatam is very specific for this age of Kali. It's not within the Bhagavatam. There's reference to appearances of the Lord and achieving perfection in many different ages besides Kali Yuga. But like here in the first canto, it's the Pandavas. You know, from the chapter 7, when the first Krishna Katha is being presented, it's the Pandavas. And then it's Queen Kunti, and then it's Bhishma Dev. These are personalities within recent times of just before Kali Yuga. Because they're personalities during the time of Krishna. Because their topic is Krishna Katha. And this discussion about the advent of Kali, the checking, Maharaj Pariksit, checking the personality of Kali, the influence of Kali upon the Brahmana son, Sringi, and the cursing of Maharaj Pariksit, all of that is for the advent of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then Srimad Bhagavatam appears just after the departure of Lord Krishna. It's specifically a manifestation, a literary manifestation of Krishna after Dwarpa Yuga. And so there's so much attention about what Kali Yuga is and the antidote for the symptoms of the age of Kali. Vyasadeva's Trikalagya, he knows past and future as well as the present age. But it's a literature specifically, it's medicine. Bhavo sadach shrotramanobi ramat. It's medicine for this particular age of Kali. It's compiled by Vyas with that concern in mind. Described in the fourth chapter. Because he's Trikalagya, he saw what the age of Kali will be. He saw how horrible it would be, so he wanted to do something. So he divided the Vedas to make it easily understandable and so on. It's a literature explicitly for this age of Kali. And so much is surrounding. At the same time, the author Vyas knows of previous ages and describes forms of the Lord, great devotees, Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj, personalities of previous yugas. But it's how that applies specifically to deliverance in this age of Kali. It's a medicine for this age.
When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world, he disappeared by entering into a deity in Puri. Although he incarnated in Kali Yuga, then why Krishna left this world in a different way?
Why not? Why not? Is there a problem with how Krishna did it? He could have entered into a deity, but he did this other way. He has his own sweet will. This, so many... Why did Krishna tell Yudhisthira to tell a lie? Why did Krishna dance with gopis in the forest in the dead of night? by those two acts, one could say Krishna's setting the example, the standard. An example is the standard, tell lies and dance with young girls in the dead of night. So why did Krishna do those things? He had a purpose. And he was fulfilling his purpose. And he didn't have to ask anybody's permission. He just... So for each thing, we can give the reason, but for each thing, Krishna has a purpose. So for his purpose, Krishna is bewildering the minds of the atheists by leaving a body after getting shot in the foot. Who dies from getting shot in the foot? At most, you may lose your foot, but you don't lose your life. But Krishna gave up his body, which he doesn't have, by being shot in the foot. Why did he do that? To bewilder the minds of... But the devotees can understand, but through, particularly through the agency of our acharyas, as the universal form is a form that allows speculators to take any meaning they like. So Krishna left the world in that way. Yetam mam prapadyante tam sadaiva. Krishna is satisfying the desires of all living beings. Why did Krishna present more than one chapter of Bhagavad Gita? All he needed to say was sarva dharmam pratyaja mami kam sharanam braja. End. Just one verse. And he says so many different things. He's fulfilling the desires of all living entities, leading them ultimately in the path to reach him. And he does it in his own sweet way. Why not?
Maharaj, in the middle class, there was one sentence that was, duty becomes for one's elevation if they are followed. And they should not just follow it because it suits for their nature. And during the Srila Prabhupada time, there was the devotees who work again, even those things do not suit for their nature. So I just wanted to know, what is that main driving force which make one to follow even the things do not suit for their nature?
The example that I gave was the example of Sankirtan. Harinam, Sankirtan, and book distribution. Those activities are natural for the soul because of our contamination and conditioning. Souls don't normally do those things. They follow the conditioned nature. So in terms of occupation, let's say, you know, as the unfolding of the Krishna consciousness movement, someone did administration, someone was with treasury, someone was in the kitchen, someone was doing purchasing, someone was, you know, transcribing and doing, you know, editorial work. But the transcendental activity was something that Prabhupada wanted everyone to do, because that's also our nature. And it's the desire of the Lord that everyone engage in the chanting, congregation chanting of the holy name for our benefit and the benefit of others. So it's looking to the spiritual nature as well as the psychophysical nature. We normally would think of prescribed duty according to our psychophysical nature. But there's transcendental duty also. Let's say, you know, the transcendental duty of chanting 16 rounds. How many people do we see, according to their psychophysical nature, are doing something that even resembles that? But it's a duty, because it's our transcendental nature. And we accept, because it's assigned to us. And then, you know, some people say, why 16 rounds? Why not 2 or 8 or 500 or, you know, why 16 rounds? It's assigned by the spiritual master, so it's 16 rounds. And those things that are assigned, that's our duty. So there's some things that are for all to do. Does that address your question or no? Somewhat, but not completely. So then the part that I didn't address, you can ask again.
Maharaj, that what is that relationship which makes one to work, or what is that which makes one to dedicate his life or serve his spiritual master?
What makes one dedicated to do those things that are assigned by the spiritual master?
Maharaj,
you're asking?
Maharaj, whatever the instruction is given, or whatever the advice or whatever is given to the disciple, and how he is able to do it, what is that relationship or...
I don't get it. It's called devotional service. I don't know.
My understanding is that he is saying that how is it that against one's nature one is able to execute the order of this person?
That's your ask? That's what you're asking? Oh. Okay. Faith. And as I explained, it turns out it's not against our nature, our spiritual nature. And that is also faith. Many devotees, just referring back to that example of public Harinam, Sankirtan, and book distribution, and what to speak of, you know, public speaking. As devotees, who, at least, you know, my life is made up of those things, but those things aren't, I wouldn't say that's part of my nature. It just has become a service because of it's the desire of the spiritual master. And so that's my life. And then by practice, it becomes, in Prabhupada's own words, it becomes second nature. By practice, something becomes second nature. Practice, practice, practice. That becomes your nature. But the faith part is that it's consistent with the nature of the soul. So if I can look beyond my material conditioning with the assistance of scripture and guru and sadhu and see the spiritual realm, at least, you know, move towards the spiritual realm with faith. This will take me to that spiritual realm. Then it's, that's the impetus. And by so doing, it's natural. Like, take another example, dancing in kirtan. Many people, when they come to our temples and they see people dancing, they don't know what to make of it. One devotee just wrote me a letter saying, you know, I like the philosophy, but I couldn't relate to all the dancing. So I stopped coming. And then, you know, I was unhappy. So I came back again, and then it was all this dancing, and I couldn't relate to it. So I kept a distance. It's, you know, it's not my nature. But it's actually from the soul's perspective, it's kevalananda kanda. It's a natural expression. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described to his spiritual master, Ishwara Puri, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but when I chant, I just start dancing and trembling, all these symptoms. What am I doing wrong? Oh, you're not doing something wrong. It was just happening spontaneously. And other examples. You know, being vegetarian. Some people say, oh, I can't live without that unmentionable stuff. I can't just eat lettuce and rabbit food. They say that. But it's natural. So conditioning makes something look unnatural. Or, you know, that one feels resistance to it. So what allows one to get over that conditioned resistance is faith in the spiritual master. And that the nature of the soul will come out by following these activities. And so I do.
So Maharaj, we hear that in Parampara and Bhagavad Gita is eternal science. Srimad Bhagavatam, does that mean it manifested? So it like started and was not previously before Vyasadeva wrote?
I don't understand what your question is. Are you asking, is it a contemporary literature only? Is that what you're asking?
Maharaj, I'm asking that, it was not before Kali Yuga. Is it that? Srimad Bhagavatam was not before Kali Yuga.
In its fullness, it was manifested only by Vyasadeva. The essence of it was those four essential verses. And then he manifested in its fullness. I'm not sure what you're asking. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Very much. Srila Prabhupada. Good day.